From the studios of KXCI Community Radio in Tucson, Arizona, I'm King David McKenzie with the Unvarnished Truth. Here's some of how the world is treating itself today, the 13th of July, 2009. Welcome to the work week, friends. Back on the job after a week of adjusting to a new cholesterol medicine the doctor has me on, the biggest ongoing drawback being that I no longer can drink my beloved grapefruit juice, and I'm fairly sure Howard Stern has another excuse for taking the same week off. The most important story to emerge in the week since I last cut one of these programs, the Tucson Roller Derby held its Wheelies Awards night over the weekend, and according to my source, which happens to be one of the co-captains of one of the teams, here's how that all shook out. For the Furious Truck Stop Waitresses, Best Pivot and Best Jammer were both won by Peaches Rodriguez, and the Best Blocker went to Sassy Sue. Vice Squad, Best Pivot, Kerry Guns. Best Jammer, Sammy Automatic. Best Blocker, Deadlock Doe. Iron Curtain, Best Pivot was Bianca Troll, while the Best Jammer and Best Blocker both went to Lucifer. For the Copper Queens, Best Pivot and Best Jammer was Dirty Terry, on both counts, and Best Blocker was Powder Keg. League-wide awards, Triple Threat was Lucifer. Rather fitting with those threes in her name. Most Valuable Player, Sammy Automatic. Sweetest, Polygraph. Meanest, Deadlock Doe. Most Improved, a tie, Bianca Troll and Zippy's Takeout. Best Tattoo, Metal Maiden. Worst Injury, Carla Marx. Best Bum, Dirty Terry. And Best Legs, Lucifer. Wait a minute. I didn't see Helen Wheels' name anywhere in that. Now, that's... That's not fair. Anyway, looks like Lucifer has a few trinkets to drag to Austin with her. If these don't get her onto a TXRD squad, the Hellcats would be perfect for her. Or a Texas Roller Girls clique. The Hail Marys are just as natural a choice, then something is radically wrong within those city limits. Up in Chicago, there's a horrifying story unfolding in relation to the historic Burr Oaks Cemetery in the southwestern suburb of Alsip, Illinois. That's the cemetery where there have been buried, among other dearly departed, the civil rights icon Emmett Till, blues legends Kokomo Arnold, Willie Dixon, and Otis Spann, Count Basie's favorite trumpeter, Sonny Cohn, legendary black vaudeville comedian Butterbeans Jody Edwards of Butterbeans and Susie, and the incomparable jazz singer Dinah Washington. It turns out that over the course of the last 4 years, over 300 bodies, perhaps including some of those I have just listed, have been secretly removed from their original graves, robbed of valuables that were in their caskets, and dumped in a mass grave while their original plots were sold and double-sold to people seeking new grave sites for their loved ones. Four dastardly characters involved in the cemetery's most recent management have been arrested. The scam allegedly netted each hundreds of thousands of dollars, and the Chicago Sun-Times reports that a fund set up to build a new memorial marker for Emmett Till was also pilfered. The Reverend Jesse Jackson appeared at a press conference at Burr Oaks over the weekend and said, "There should be a special place in hell for these graveyard thieves." There just might be, Jesse. There just might be. In Salt Lake City, there's an infuriating item unfolding involving a potential false arrest by personnel of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints under the orders of LDS officials. The detained were a gay male couple, Matt Aun and Derek Jones, whose alleged crime on Thursday was simply standing in the church-owned Main Street Plaza and kissing each other on the cheek. Security guards accosted them and told them that public displays of affection were not allowed on church property. The municipality of Salt Lake City had sold the property to the Mormon Church about a dozen years ago. When Auna and Jones protested, apparently profanely, they were handcuffed and SLC police were called, after which the couple was officially banned from LDS property for the next 6 months. That was on Thursday. Yesterday, several dozen same-sex couples held a kiss-in protest on the same property, organized by former Salt Lake City Council member Dita Seed. The Missoulian newspaper in Montana reports that the self-styled Montana militia and their paranoia-fueled comrades in bootleg arms are on the rise again in the northwestern United States, apparently scared stiff by the idea that an African-American is the president of the U.S. of A. Alleged Southern Arizona child murderer Shauna Ford was connected to some of these idiots who bogusly called themselves the Freemen. Further details at crooksandliars.com. The Austin Post-Bulletin newspaper reports that some neo-Nazis tried to hold a rally in Austin, Minnesota on Saturday afternoon. What the Post-Bulletin writer, some hack called Jim Troyer, failed to mention, and one reader added to the website comments about the story, was that there were only 11 of those knuckle-draggers and 115 red-blooded all-American counter-protesters. Way to go. Perhaps as regrettable is the fact that the Tucson Weekly continues to ignore this program, while that rags media columnist John Schuster wastes ink on a 3-year contract extension by the Milwaukee Journal Company, owners of KQTH Radio here in Tucson, for their most prominent hate talker, the arrogantly misnamed John Justice. Of course, Schuster is also on the payroll of another corporatist media company, Citadel Broadcasting. Alternative press my ass. One of my favorite books when I was 11 years old was one I wasn't supposed to have a copy of, something called The Herod Experiment by Robert Rimmer. It was about a bootleg college in Massachusetts where the students were encouraged to experiment sexually with each other, and from what I recall, the text was fairly explicit in describing some of the sexual encounters. For a 70s Wisconsin kid going through puberty and unable to shoplift copies of Penthouse from the local open pantry on a regular basis, this was the next best thing. There was also a movie made of the novel the following year, probably thanks to the paperback edition I'd grabbed a copy of in 72. DVDs of that movie are available in some of those 20 or 50 movie packs with no star casts available at better Target stores everywhere. At least that's where I got my copy of that flick. Well, now there's a news story out of England that seems like old times to me. A new sex education course that has been developed by the Sheffield Office of the National Health Service titled Pleasure, which seeks to tell its students about the benefits of regular sexual activity, be it either intercourse or masturbation. The course's slogan appears to actually be, "An orgasm a day keeps the doctor away." And the introductory text reads in part, "Health promotion experts advocate 5 portions of fruit and vegetables a day and 30 minutes physical activity 3 times a week. What about sex or masturbation 2 a week?" This sounds like a stray copy of Herod made it across the Atlantic and someone at NHS Sheffield decided to read it and took it seriously. Perhaps tellingly, I noticed that both English football teams Sheffield Wednesday and Sheffield United are mired in the league championship division, one notch below the premiership, pretty much like what AAA baseball is to the National and American leagues here in the States and Canada. And maybe someone in Sheffield thought Herod had more entertaining ideas than what was going on at Bramall Lane or Hillsborough Stadium. Maybe. Of course, there have been a ton of obituaries worth noting in the last dozen or so days. Among those that caught my eye were Bob Mitchell, apparently Los Angeles's last surviving and active theater organist from the silent era of cinema, who most recently plied that trade in June at the Silent Movie Theater on Fairfax. His first gig came at age 12 at the Strand Theater in Pasadena on Christmas Day of 1924. Notably, a Tampa contemporary, Rosa Rio, continues to perform silent movie accompaniment at age 107. Mitchell was also the Los Angeles Dodgers' first organist at Chavez Ravine and the director of the Bob Mitchell Boys Choir, the starting place for, among other folks, members of the popular 1960s vocal groups The Letterman and The Sandpipers. L.A., congestive heart failure at 96. Brad Sherman, who was one of the first voices on the all-news format of WINS New York after Murray the K's rock and roll format was canceled in 1965, he stayed with the station through to 1992. Manhattan, after years of battling both Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, at 83. Paul Hemphill, the journalist and novelist who wrote about sports, country, music, and the haunted social legacy of the South. Atlanta, oral cancer at 73. T. Scott Cunningham, the Broadway actor who also popped up in small roles in the remake of The Out-of-Towners and on the Law & Order television series New York City, from pneumonia and acute respiratory distress syndrome at 47. Rick Hardman, screenwriter who scripted several of the better Western television series of the 50s and 60s, as well as the theatrical films Gunman's Walk with Van Heflin and The Rare Breed with James Stewart, Los Angeles, cancer, at 84. Chris Gray, who was generally an equivalent in England and France in the late 60s to what Jerry Rubin and Abbie Hoffman were doing in America at the same time in terms of both creative anarchism and literature writing, London, cancer, at 66. Drake Levin, marvelous guitarist on many of the best 1960s hits of Paul Revere and the Raiders, including Kicks, Hungry, and Good Thing, San Francisco, cancer, at 62. And lastly for this go-around, but by no means least, Burt Simmons, the legendary Negro League baseball pitcher and outfielder who was the last surviving member of the Baltimore Elite Giants in Baltimore, cancer, at 85. If you have any material you'd like for me to include in the next few days, just email me at baronofarizona@gmail.com. That's baronofarizona@gmail.com. And please indicate where you're listening to this program from. Oh, and one thing more today. A study at England's Keele University near Newcastle-under-Lyme, Staffordshire, has found that swearing legitimately makes pain more tolerable. Richard Stevens, one of the researchers that wrote the report, says it taps into emotional brain centers and appears to arise in the right brain, whereas most language production occurs in the left cerebral hemisphere of the brain. The researchers enlisted 64 undergraduate volunteers and had them submerge their hand in a tub of ice water for as long as possible while repeating a swear word of their choice. The experiment was then repeated with the volunteer repeating a more common word that they would use to describe a table. Contrary to what the researcher expected, the volunteers kept their hands submerged longer while repeating the cussing. The researchers think that the increase in pain tolerance occurs because swearing triggers the body's natural fight or flight response. Stevens and his colleagues suggest that swearing may increase aggression, seen in accelerated heart rates, which downplays weakness to appear stronger or more macho. The results of the study are detailed in the August 5th issue of the journal Neuro Report. Of course, There may be quite a lot of swearing initiated by notices of a lot of money and man-hours being spent to find something out that I've personally known through first-hand experience since, say, the Reagan administration. Of course, if you don't like this news, you always have the option of making some news yourself. In Tucson, I'm King David McKenzie. Until tomorrow, have yourselves some peace and oranges. Thank you.